I'll do it here. My sobriety date is August 20th, 1975. And I had no idea that I was going to get a brand new life or I would have fled. So anyway, thank you very much for the invite, Harlan. And, I had an inspiration. It talks about in the 11th step that we rely on our inspiration. I had an inspiration Tuesday night to give a call. And I was driving home, and since I sit on the freeway a lot, I have a Bluetooth, and I can call people and talk and drive at the same time because I'm sober now, and I got things figured out pretty well, and I can pay attention and keep my eyes on the road. And I decided I just need to call Harlan just to tell him, just give him a little hard time. It's my third time up here, so I kind of wanted to ask him if he was sure if he wanted me here, and he's heard me before, and so we had a lovely chat. It was a lot of fun, and Zan got on the phone, and we were talking about the banquet, and I've been here before, so I know it's a little casual, and I said, well, nobody really dresses up, and Zan said, well, Harlan thinks it's dressed up if he has a clean pair of sweats on, and so we were laughing. I'm just so grateful I had that moment with him, because since the first time I met him, he's made my Christmas list, and it's been years, and he and Zan have gotten my Christmas card for years. And as Harlan would say, quick story. When I was up here with Mike Casey, it was raining, go figure, right? And we went to the pie place. That's all I remember was they were pie, lots of pies. So we went to the pie place. I don't know how many booths we took up, but I remember Casey throwing back his head and laughing and Harlan laughing and they were bonding and it was joyous to watch. And then I looked over and Bob B. from Minneapolis was, I think, on his third piece of pie. So we were like teasing him and I think he ate like 3/4 of a pie. And so we just laughed and had a great time. I think Bob had a stomachache the next day, but it was just, it's a moment in time that the happy, joyous, and free, that was one of the years I came up here, that was one of your themes, was very apparent in this conference and very apparent in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, Ryan with his not quite 1 year, or no, 30 days, and Chad with his, I don't know, how many months do you have now? 4 months, and Liz with your time, and Steve with his time. We all just have today, and a day well lived. I put my head on the pillow at night, and I sleep at night now. I never could before, and I've got some friends in the room, all the people that are speaking, and the Magdalena Redemption. Redemption, what a story. I feel very moved by everything that I've heard, and the people I'm with, and the people I see, and the eyes that are bright and ready to just receive love. Whatever you think love is, it's all over this room. And thank goodness I have a God way bigger than me and a sponsor very loud, louder than my head. I've always had a sponsor louder than my head, and I've always had smart feet since the beginning of sobriety, and I still have smart feet because my head many days, especially on a Monday, I don't know. I got to go out in the real world, right? And they don't understand me. They still don't. I don't get along with those people. I don't tell them jokes anymore because they look at me like, that's a little dark, Sharon. And, I try to correct people with some compassion sometimes, and they just look at me like, it's the legal field. So they just go, huh? So I've been doing this for, I've been working in the legal field for 20-some years, almost 30 years, and it's because I've been pardoned, which is thank you. I get to do things like that today. But it's still like, they don't get me and I don't get them. But they don't know about me. They're going to say, how was your trip to Oregon? And I'm going to say, it was really great, thank you. How was your weekend? And they love to talk about themselves. So, I have learned how to go and close the door and pick up the phone and go, I need to say this to my boss. What do you think? Well, no, let's just kind of pause and wait on that one for a minute. So I check in with you guys during the day. I need to because I get sucked into that world where I'm not going to fit in. And it's okay because I was a little girl growing up in Iowa. I had a beautiful home and a beautiful family. And about 6, I realized I was in Iowa. And then I went, I'm supposed to be in California, and the spaceship must have, I don't know, something happened in the chute, dropped me in Iowa. And I have three siblings, a Mensa, a doctorate, and Nurse Sally, who got a nurse kit at 4 for Christmas and wanted to move to Alaska because she read a book on Alaska. And that's what she did. At 4, she knew her purpose. And I am the one that was looking for the mothership. And my father had to go read the Enquirer magazine and things like that because there was not a lot about UFOs back in the day. And I would sit in the cornfield until it got too tall, and then I would go across the road to the soybean field so I could sit there on a summer night and wait and look for the mothership. And I never really fit in. And somewhere, Jack was talking about, somewhere around, I don't know, where it was 7 or 8, I started to see the world as it was. And I knew God loved me, and I loved God, and I knew God was love, and I had all of that. But it began to turn, and I began to see things that weren't kind. I began to see things that, I remember when, I grew up in the country, so there were a lot of things that, with the animals and things, that just freaked me out. I couldn't handle it. So I stopped eating meat for a while, and I got into reading about Gandhi. I don't know how that happened, but I would sit at the dinner table and my mother would go, well, at least eat your mashed potatoes if you won't eat the pork, you know? And it was like, well, there were pigs across the street at the Russell Farm and now they're gone and they're sitting on the table, you know? And I got really upset about things like that. I got extremely sensitive, and we would go to Grandpa and Grandma's house and I would make them stop the car so I could run back and hug my Grandpa Wesley because I knew he would die before I would see him again. And they were just like, okay, she's got to run back and hug him again. You know, I'm 7, 8 years old. And then I'm starting to see spirits come out of the river. And then my best friend, you know, when I hear voices and things, I don't know what happened, who knows, but I had a big imagination, how's that? And she said, tell me some things about yourself. Tell me some secrets. We were camping out. And so I told her, and for 2 years, she never asked me over to play again. So I kind of was getting at that. I better keep some of that under wraps. And there was always dancing, and my dad was Czech, and we had polkas and accordions, and my mother was a teacher, so she stayed at home to raise us kids, and we always had a lot of education, and we always read the encyclopedia. It was very exciting. I loved the way they smelled, and we had piano lessons, and I played the saxophone, and then I played the accordion because my Mensa older sister just took everything. She was like tops in the world about everything, and so, you know, I'm right behind her, so what do I do for my dad's eye? I'll take accordion lessons, you know, and it wasn't cool then, and it's still kind of not cool now, so I would be at Swisher dancing with the boys from Iowa City who V-neck sweaters, English leather, you know, Righteous Brothers, get up real close and dance that slow song. And I wanted to smell some booze under that English leather, you know. And if I could smell it on them, I knew they had some in the car. And my parents would drop me off for this dance. And then I would find the boys from Iowa City. I would have what they had in the back of their car, and then they would pick me up, and I would pass out in the back seat. And my mother said, oh, she's just tired from dancing. You know, so there was really no alcoholism. They had big parties, and weddings were big, and funerals were big, and, you know, barn dances were big, and all of that was big, but I didn't see anybody punching each other out. I didn't see any, I mean, there was probably stuff going on, but everybody was happy, and there was always food and music and booze, and I was always sipping it and looking for it, and it wasn't like it had made a difference in my life until I was about 13, and I went out with the Clark boys, and they let me hang out, and they had a 57 Chevy, and it was very cool. And one night, we just kind of all pulled up the cars, all the football players, and there were some of the cheerleaders, and wow, and they're putting it on the cable. I think it was the Little Rock, Arkansas, some station. And so we put all the rock and roll on the same station. And then out came the Canadian Club and the Schlitz beer. And I'm sitting on the hood of that 57 Chevy, and next to me is this cheerleader. And she's got a sweater on, and it's like, it's 80 degrees. It's summer in Iowa, you know? And she turned sideways, and I saw why she had her little sweater tucked into her little shorts, you know, 38D, and I looked down, and I have my T-shirt on and the trainer bra, and I just kind of felt very inadequate until Thank You Canada, Canadian Club came by, I took a big swig, the Schlitz beer came by, big swig, and I won the chug-a-lug contest. We used to actually, you would open it with the church key on the bottom, hold it up and pop the top, and it was like, it just went down. I like won. It was, and so pretty soon the trainer bra wakes up, my legs get curvy, and move over, Jeanette, I'm here, and it was a great night. I didn't feel inadequate. I didn't feel like I wasn't enough. I felt empowered, and I was always seeking that contact, that conscious contact with something or someone or a God that I knew loved me, and that night I felt it. That night I felt the spirits of alcohol filled me up spiritually, I think, because it was a moment. It was a night. It felt great. And, you know, then I would play in the Boddicker accordion band, and we would go to the sauerkraut days or beef days or whatever the little towns were having their big celebrations, and I'd be sitting there. My mother had made this red piqué dress that would sit, the skirt would fit over the bale of hay I was sitting on. And, you know, when you have a hangover and the hay pokes through to your butt, it's like, oh, and then you have to do something called a bellow shake, which is very fast, and you have a hangover and you don't want to get sick in your accordion. Plus, you know, Mrs. Boddicker is watching, and, you know, Lady of Spain, beer barrel polka, whatever it was, and we'd go down, and then the boys from Iowa City would be there, isn't that fun girl? And it was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, you know, it was like I didn't want them to see the wholesome side of me at all. But then we would go around maybe to the next block, and there was my dad, and he'd be standing by his buddies, and he'd go, hey, it's my girl, you know, and it was worth it for me just to get a thumbs up from my dad. And, you know, life went on. My sister went off to college. Everybody goes off to college. I went off to college. It was the 60s. It wasn't just say no. It was just say thanks. There was a lot going on. I'm sorry. I got really lovey on acid. Really, like, I remember the summer of the Orange Sunshine. Somebody, I met them in New York City walking across the street, somebody I knew, and I said, it's my birthday. He reached in and handed me a bag of Orange Sunshine powder. It was like, okay, vitamin C for the whole year. I just licked my fingers and dip in. And so anyway, life went on, and I had my heart broken, and my fiance, I caught him under a sorority light thanking his sorority girl, who was his tutor. And he was a wrestler, so I got drunk to go confront him. And I'm on the floor in 2 seconds, and I'm spitting at him, and I'm mad, and I'm drunk. And my mother said, aren't you going to cry? And I said, no. And nobody said I couldn't cry. Nobody said, aren't you going to cry? Aren't you upset? And I went, no, not going to show it, not going to show it. And what I did was eventually I cut my wrists, and my dad and the priest came down to talk to me, and the priest and I got really drunk on whiskey sours at dinner, and ended up in the student union at a love-in. I was like, oh, God. And my father was appalled. She is ruining the family priest here. She's corrupting him. And it was a huge room like this, and we're all in the sit-in. My father's way over there, and I can see his set his jaw. My dad would set his jaw because he just didn't want to react to me, because he would say, what is wrong with you? You look bad. I remember he came down to try to bring some food to me at the university, and I'm cleaning a couple of pounds on the table. You know, you can't hide that. And I had a fake ID, and I went to Joe's place. I was going to art school, but I was really drunk a lot of the times. And one time I kind of passed out on the canvas. We had a big project. And so then I realized if I'm going to lay on the canvas, I better put some paint on me and then lay on the canvas. So I did that. And then the next week, you know, we're going to work on our projects. So I put paint on the other side, and I laid down, because I'd been at Joe's place drinking. And the professor said to me, you know, you can come every class and not miss a class, and I'll give you a C, but something's wrong with you. And this is like an out-there professor, you know, art out-there professor. And I just thought, screw you. Nobody understands. But this was the beginning of me beginning having to slide across the bar things in my life that were important to me, or I thought were important to me. So I had to slide across the bar my art talent. At some point, I had to slide across the bar any musical ability I'd had. And when I met Bob Dylan in California, or in Colorado, coming to California for the first time, I think it was Bob, but had a guitar, had long hair. It was Aspen, could have been. You know, I had to slide across the bar of my dignity. You know, try saying that when you're drunk. Yeah, I have my dignity, you know, and have my dignity. But I didn't realize that I would go home and my father would ask me, what is going on with you? And I would tell him. And that is not something that fathers need to know in detail. And I would give my dad enough detail to hurt him. And then when he tried to help me, I wouldn't let him. And my big cry was, I'm not hurting anyone but me, leave me alone. And that's my defiance. So stand back and watch me die. Selfish and self-centered and insane. I'm not hurting anyone but me, so leave me alone. And they didn't know how to help me. I'm the only alcoholic out of the children and everyone. When my grandfather died, I couldn't get out of Joe's place to go to the hospital, which was probably a couple of blocks away, to say goodbye to my grandpa Wesley, my favorite guy, the one that I used to make them stop the car so I could go give him another hug. And there were things like that that were happening that I had to drink over that were deep pains for me. I started to do my chapter 3. I told you about New York. I worked in an ad agency. It was fun and crazy and 2-hour martini lunches and the best place to work. They gave me 2-week vacation after 6 months, and I never came back. I just never came back. And that's when I went back to art school, and I couldn't paint, and I couldn't do anything anymore. It was gone, dead. My creativity with putting anything on the canvas was gone. And my mom and dad had oil paintings in their living room I had done. To this day, I've not done oil paintings. It left me. And that's when I began to, you know, I ended up California for the first time, kicked out of a commune because I'm the drinker and all they do is smoke pot and drool on themselves. There was one dog that didn't like the pot either. The animals were stoned. There was the one dog that didn't like the pot, and I was like, come on, you guys. I drank their bong wine. They got mad at me. Yeah, it was nasty, but it worked. And so they took me on a picnic and told me to bring my stuff, and I don't know why I have to bring my stuff to go on a picnic, but they took me to Mount Baldy and waved goodbye, me and the dog. So I ended back. I hitchhiked coast to coast. I hitchhiked a lot. And, you know, I cried my way out, bought my way out. The dog would bite our way out. I mean, situations getting in and out. Sometimes we would just laugh after, you know, did you see the guns in the trunk? They came back for us. We hid in the palmetto bushes outside Pensacola. It rained like crazy, so they finally left. But they were looking for us. And we got a milk truck and waved him down, and he didn't want to stop, and it was 5 a.m, and he took us into town in Pensacola. We waited 6 o'clock for a bar to open, and we start drinking, and we're laughing about it. You know, write that home in a postcard to your mom. You know, my mother didn't sleep at night for a lot of years because she wasn't sure where her daughter was or how she was. But I'm not hurting anyone but me, so leave me alone. Just stand back, Dad, and watch me die. Come on, Mom. Don't be so soft. And nobody knew alcoholism, and I certainly did. I had gone to psychiatrists. I had pancreatitis. I had gallbladder removed. I had signs of alcoholism, but the family doctor wanted me to go to therapy and put me on Valium therapy, and I hate being down, drooling on yourself, going to the party. You know, I am up and moving. I'm that kind of girl. And what's your name and where are we going? And I'll change my name. That's fine. You know, I don't care. And I ended up at an organic farm in northern Wisconsin. And that was a lot of work. I didn't realize that the 50 head of organic sheep make 50 head of manure down there. You got a shovel. And so we had, organic people around us and you know, everything, smoking organic and drinking organic, and it was so much work. I just wanted some cheap wine. Give me some Thunderbird. I don't care. So I put my quarters together because I painted mailboxes. That's how I made my money. I painted mailboxes. And so I put my quarters together and go get some cheap wine, and they would look at me like, oh, we know where you're going now with that. You're going to turn into somebody we don't know. What is wrong with you? Can't you just smoke this? Why do you have to act that way? And I'd hiss at them and throw their Pete Seeger records against the wall. And, you know, I'd learn to play the spoons, and I'd throw the spoons at them because they had hootenannies all the time. Boring. And I try to fit in and drink this little organic dandelion wine we had made. You have to pluck every, oh my God, that was so much work. And somebody got some money, and they all, this is after, you know, being frozen all winter, frozen. We planted some crop, which was nice, and the sheep manure, and we dug it under and rototilled it and Maui Waui seed, and it was growing. And they left to do primal therapy, and this stuff was like 10 feet tall now, and that's where I spent my, I buy my cheap wine, and I go have my primal in the patch and scream at the sheep, you know. And my friend Clarence the farmer would come, and he'd bring the wild turkey or something, and I could hear him coming around the lane on that tractor because his license had been pulled in the state of Wisconsin for too many DUIs, so he drove the tractor. And but he was my buddy. He didn't put on his teeth sometimes. Whatever, Clarence, it's fine. And that's the way I was living. And my parents thought that this guy that I had met, that they knew his family. He was from my high school. And that this organic farm, we bought 85 acres of organic land. We named Cowpath Farm. We named the farm. You know, we were maybe going to get married, but God, it was just so much work. And they went off to do primal therapy. The last time I saw him, he was driving a Porsche. I mean, he wasn't doing organic anymore anyway. That was a funny amends. He called me. He was in town, and I happened to be home, and I happened, you know, this is in sobriety. So I asked him to come out, so we pulled up two lawn chairs out by the river where I grew up and sat there, and we both looked at each other at the same time to make amends. It was hilarious. Because he was kind of a jerk to me at the end and kind of left me there. And I did a little harvesting, and it was really beautiful and tasted good and smoked good, and I ate it and smoked it and bathed in it. And, you know, I got really organic. It was, that winter I didn't put a razor to my legs or anywhere else for a while. And so I remember going up to turn the windmill on, because we had a windmill and it would pump the water. I mean, really, it was a lot of work. I didn't sign up for this. And I stood up there, and the wind is blowing, and you know, I have shorts on or something, and I thought there were ants crawling on my legs, and it was the wind going through the long hair on my legs. I'd never experienced that before. It was like, oh my God, I have like not even taken care of myself. And because it was so cold, you just kept bundled up. It was a non-insulated schoolhouse, believe me, cold. So I went to turn this crop into some money because I could feel, it was August, I could feel the snap of winter already up there. And I went, no, I'm getting out of town. And my mom and dad thought I was still on Cowpath Farm with Phil. Gonna maybe, because, I mean, we had honeybees, we tapped maple trees, we would put our little labels on the, have you ever tapped it? You guys tap maple trees. You know how much work it is. You got to boil this. You got to go through the snow and with these buckets. And it's fine when you go out to the trees. They're empty buckets. And you put them on the little tap. And then you go get the buckets. And you come back through the crust of the snow. I went up to my thighs through the crust. And I'm stuck with two big buckets of sap, stuck in the snow, going, I just want a drink. What am I doing here? What am I trying to fix? And that was kind of the end. I was starting to plan my escape, but then thank God the primal therapy, they left. And they left me with all of that crop. Actually, when they found it, I found out from a guy who's sober and Clancy's his sponsor, when they found that patch, it had the highest THC percentage ever recorded in the state of Wisconsin. Yes. It's like, it was the sheep dung, I think it was, when they burned it. But I went and I went to do this deal. I went into a town with a college and 45 miles, and I'm loaded, and I'm drinking my cheap wine because that's what I could afford, unless Clarence would bring the hard stuff. And I go knock on this door, and they looked at me and they said, "Well, where is it?" And I went, "Oh, I left it back at the farm." So I had to turn around and drive 45 miles back. But instead, I turned around and there was the lights of a Ferris wheel and a calliope and a carousel. And I went, I always wanted to be a gypsy. And I instantly made a decision. I went over there and drank a bottle of tequila with the owner of the show, and I got a job. I passed. So now I've got my hefty bags of crop in my station wagon. I put some clothes in. I painted a big sun on the hood. I should have written "bust me" on the side. I got my joint. He gave me a shooting gallery, so now I'm a proprietor of a shooting gallery. And I had a trailer hitch on my car. He was really happy about that. So I joined the carnival. And I called my mother from somewhere down in Arkansas and said, "Mom, guess what? I'm with Matt Armstrong's show." She said, "What's that?" I said, "It's a carnival." Oh my God, she started to cry. It's like, "Mom," I said, "I'm writing a book, Mom. I'm writing a book." And she just like, that was kind of it for her. And I just thought, I can't even call home anymore. It started to get kind of bad because now I had to slide across the bar, the love of my family. I had to slide across the bar, all of those traditions and memories and everything that made me who I was as inside. But I was pouring alcohol on it. Alcohol, King Alcohol was my master, and I didn't realize it. Everything revolved around drinking. And if you didn't drink, or if I wasn't in an environment where I could drink, I didn't do it. I didn't know you. I didn't realize how much I gave up to make my life small with just me and alcohol, whatever was going on, whether it was the carnival, whether it was, you know, living in the French Quarter in New Orleans. I did that because with the carnival, I got busted. Go figure, right? And it was because I created a lot of trouble. You know, that little farm girl from Wisconsin, get her, because we got closed again last night because, you know, I wouldn't let the kids win some nights. I'm drinking my tequila and I don't care. You know, I don't care, you shot three down, I'll just pop it back up. And I got three down, you owe me a teddy bear. I said, "No, you didn't." "Yeah, I did." And they're 12 years old or something, you know, and I'm just being a big brat to these 12-year-olds and not letting them have their teddy bear because I don't feel like it tonight. So they would go off to their dads, and their dads would come, and then they would talk to me, and I was just like, "Yeah, no, they didn't," you know. And then on the carnival, there's a, well, whether you know anybody's name or not, everybody has an alias, but if you're messing with somebody, they all come over, and then it would all start, and then I'd have to take the mace out of one of my boots. It's like, mace somebody in there, and then we get closed down, and then the owner would hear about it. And he would go, "That little farm girl from Wisconsin." And Bogalusa, Louisiana was where they came and got me. Not a fun place to go to jail. And so I went off that day with my new found love. And ladies, if you're looking for potential, that's where they are. We're with the carnival. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And he had a pet skunk named Crank. So Crank and Kirby and Sharon and her dog all went to jail that morning. And the carnival left town. Bye-bye. And I couldn't believe it. I'm what? I'm where? You didn't Miranda me? I'm screaming at them because I know my rights. And about day three, I'm starting to see people's heads get pointy, and they're coming in to get me. And, you know, they hadn't started doing that yet. They eventually would, and they left me alone because I found a piece of a Coke bottle, and I just cut myself all over because they were coming. Because I was in some sort of withdrawal that I had never been in before. And I didn't know that. And I'm really insane. And they would come in at night, and in this women's part of the jail, they would pick and do what they wanted. And they left me alone because I was crazy. And after, I don't know, 2 weeks there, they said, "You have a visitor," and they put me in cuffs. I don't even know if they said that. But they just put me in cuffs and took me in the car to an office building, threw me inside, and there's my dad. And Frank Meyer got on a plane in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, connected in Chicago, brought his checkbook, flew into New Orleans, rented a car, looked at the map, where's Bogalusa? Went across Lake Pontchartrain, found me in this town, hired a lawyer, hired a bail bondsman, and they took me there and threw me in there. And my dad, I did not want to see my dad, and I know my dad did not want to see me looking like I looked. And I don't remember much about that day. They took my dad's money. They didn't let me go. I talked to my father about that day when I was about 20 years sober. It's not like I got to go home and go, hey, Dad, you remember this? Well, I'm sorry. Hey, Dad, you remember this? Well, I'm sorry. Things took a long time. It took my older sister until 2 years ago to not have the wall up with me. Wow. And I kept making the inroads with her, and things were okay, and family things were okay. But there was that wall up that she wouldn't let me in. And 2 years ago, we ended up in Paris, where my son was working. And we went to museums, and she said to me, oh, look at these. You think your brother would like these? I said, yeah, I like those, but I think Miles would like these. They were like some really nice wooden, I don't know, things. And so that summer, about 2 months later, for my birthday, in the mail, I got the ones I liked. My sister had never done that. I think, you know, why? It's been 39 years, 40 years. Why can't she trust me now? And it took that long. So it amazes me that we think we can just, things sometimes don't go right. Things sometimes, people are hurt deeply. So my dad and I talked about that day. He said, I remember you said two things the whole time. I am not guilty and it's not my fault. I am not guilty and it's not my fault. I did not look at my father except out of the corner of my eye, and his jaw was set. He wasn't going to give me any advice. He wasn't going to tell me how things were at home. I certainly was not going to ask. And I felt like that sheep manure. I mean, I felt like something on the bottom of a shoe. And the feeling I had was so horrible, and I had no alcohol in me, and I felt every piece of that degradation and what I was. And thank God I met somebody in there making their own stuff, so it got a little bit better. And they finally let me out, and they said, go to work, you're going to pay a big fine. And I went back for Kangaroo Court and paid them all this money, and I'm a convicted felon, and I have because it was for sales and possession. I wasn't selling. It was enough. It was just my stuff, but it was enough to look like I was selling. So here I am, a convicted felon. I'm in New Orleans. I don't care. Mr. Skunk Man, we hung out for 2 years. We hated each other. But nobody's leaving first. And I am on your leg all the way out the door if we're not done yet. We're not done yet. It was like, who was going to get stabbed first? And it was, we lived above this crazy biker bar where it was us and the knife fights and the craziness. And he was a heroin addict, and, you know, he would pass out a lot, and I would, you know, sit on him, you know, move him around a little bit, drag him around, and, you know, and if I would pass out, sometimes I would, like, open my eye and he'd be looking at me. I was like, I don't know what we had, but it was excitement, I guess. I don't know. It wasn't love, but nobody's leaving first. And so this skunk didn't like me at all, and neither did he. So I think one night I was really drunk, and I got my foot out of bed and stepped in something that he left by my side of the bed. So I took it and I swung it around, and it hit the wall, like, you know, like a cartoon. I just thought, wah. And he like hit the wall and slid down. I knocked him out. I thought I killed the skunk. And he like landed on his back, and But I revived him, and then we went to the bar, and I found out he liked rum and coke. So this skunk, then he would get drunk at the bar, and then I would get drunk at the bar, and it was good for a lot of drinks, I got to tell you that. He was good. He had a little kind of red glittery harness and a leash, and I would walk him down the corridor to the bar, you know. Years later, we were sober at a thing in New Orleans, and we were in the corridor, and we were standing on a second floor balcony, and we saw the crowds parting, you know, and this lady, I don't know what she had, a mink or something, and she had like all done up, and you know, she was walking, just thinking she was the cat's meow walking down the French Quarter, and everybody was parting, and I thought, I'm the cat's meow with the skunk on my, you know, watch out, here I come, and they were all the people were gaping at this woman like they had been gaping at me, and my husband. My tequila, my Jose Cuervo, and the fire didn't go out, and the person in the back bar mirror looked horrible, looked tragic, and it didn't make the fire go away. It didn't tell me who cares. So it turned on me that day. I remember that day. I had more to go, but you know, I did a lot of starting over in St. Louis, and I came to in Florida once with people. I don't know, they were swimming with dolphins. I thought we were swimming with sharks. You know, it's like they were all mad at me because I guess I drove them on the freeway the wrong way. And I mean, my blackouts, I have to better take care of myself in my blackouts. I thought, that's what I thought. You know, I'd wake up in Algiers and places that were dangerous across the river. I just would hope I could, you know, get my way out of it. And I did. I got my way out of a lot of situations. And my mom and dad didn't know what was going on with their daughter. And I remember getting a Valentine's present from my mother because she always sent me a Valentine's present. And maybe it had been a couple years. And this package came to the bar 2 weeks later because I was at another bar. But she thought, you know, she sent it to the one that she thought maybe where I was. And it got there a couple of weeks. And it was a sweater. I remember it because she knew I'd call home if I got the gift. Hurting anyone but me. Leave me alone. That's what King Alcohol told me. Leave me alone. Let me be the victim. You guys all have a nice life. I don't fit in. I'm not going to fit in. I remember when they sat me at the kids' table at Thanksgiving because you were afraid of me. I had made the big table. Now I'm back at the kids' table. And that day I knew it was over with the family, that they didn't understand me. So I came to California on my way to Hawaii, and I never made Hawaii. And I sat at Barney's Beanery. I have a red dashiki. I have a Panama hat. I have my backpack with the book Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass, because that's my study. I always have my booze, because I'm not going to run out. In California, they close at 2. That was frightening for me, because I've been living in a 24-hour town. And I saw the Big Book for the first time in that bar, and this girl was really drunk, and it was the second edition, and she was on the bar, and she had to have this court card signed, and people were signing it in there, you know, She was really drunk. Her name was Chris. And the bartender said, "You're not driving to an AA meeting like this. I'm calling you a cab." And he took her keys. And she went out the bar just having to feel her way out that right side of Barney's. Here were the stools. There was the wall. She had to feel her way out and fall into a cab. And we all took her, "Go for you, Chris. Go to A&A." You know, we gave her a big toast. And I am unemployable in the French Quarter, in the seedy, sorry, lower Decatur Street, which is now very nice, but it was seedy, sorry, smell the bathroom walking in. I got fired for having a bad attitude. I had to work my way down. I'm in Los Angeles. They hired me at some place on La Cienega for half the shift. I couldn't fit in their little, I was so bloated. I was 175, 80 pounds, toxic, spots on my face, unbathed because I couldn't, it hurt, water hurt. I remember when water started to hurt on my body. And they asked me to go because I couldn't remember where the drinks went. I would stand in the middle of the floor with this tray of drinks, and I couldn't remember. And the guy came over to me, the owner or whatever. He said, "We'll pay you for the night. Just don't come back. Turn in your uniform," which I could barely get in. And I became unemployable, and I didn't have any place to stay. And I don't know. I don't know. And I was on my way to Palm Springs to party with some guys, and I don't know what group they were in. They were nice though. They weren't mean to me. But I think they need a little extra weight. It was windy that night, going from LA to the desert. So they looked, "Oh, she's a little chubby. Let's put her on the back." So my dashiki, my backpack, my Panama hat tied down with a bandana, went to Palm Springs, and we pulled into some gas station, and they had shiny cars and shiny people. And I just thought, "Look at me, I'm free. Look at them and their little cars and their life and their boring. I'm free." Oh, little did I know, it was all a lie. I had turned my two-fingered peace sign into one. I was angry and alone, and I had shut myself off from human feelings. And I knew in the darkest of nights that terror, though. I remember I was staying with that girl, Chris, not knowing that she was in and out of AA at one point, until she moved out, and then I had nowhere to go. And I remember at one point crawling across the floor because Cal Worthington was on TV, this old black and white, and that meant the liquor stores are closing. And I went, "Oh, crap, I'm out." And I had to go hide in the bushes all the way to this liquor store because they're out there, because they're going to get me. And I drove by that where I had stayed and where the liquor store was, and it was two houses down. But it was treacherous out there. And that's where I had gotten myself to. And so we're in Palm Springs, and those guys left me at some club because I was not fun. I was not fun. And who knows what I said or did to them. And I came to, and I was in a building with some people and a couple of guys that knocked me around, and I realized this wasn't a DT. I had very violent DTs. Like at times in the middle of the night, I would have these dreams that would wake me up with people choking me, and really. So I was deep in alcoholism and not knowing it. I would sometimes wake up on the floor. I don't know how I got there. I would like pop on the floor. So I am in this place, and I'm realizing that it's really happening. It's not a dream. It's not fantasy. And they broke my jaw in three places and my nose, and I had a concussion, and they drug me around on the cement because they were small, and I was like a beached whale. I was passed out now. I was knocked out. And some gardener found me. I was in the bottom of a ditch, but I heard a voice that said, that great fact deep down within said, "Get up, I want to live." And as I heard the car door slams, I came to, heard that voice, don't remember anything else. I guess I passed out in a lawn chair by a pool. A gardener found me at 6 a.m., called an ambulance. I end up on a gurney in Palm Springs Hospital. They don't know who I am. I have no ID. I have no clothes. I have nothing. So I'm writing my name, because I have to write my name because I can't talk. And in front of my name, I see the word victim. Victim. Yeah. Call home. Tell them I made it. And if this broken face could have smiled, it would have. And my mother got a call from somebody. They didn't tell her my condition. They said how I was and what had happened, and they didn't tell her what hospital I was in. So for 2 days, my mother and my sister in New York and my mother in Iowa called every hospital till they found me. And then my mother could sleep at night again. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother slept at night all those years because of you. As Norm would say, I'm overpaid. I'm overpaid. So I was in the hospital 2 weeks, and then I had nowhere to go, and somebody said they felt sorry for me from Barney's. Barney's was my conduit to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I lived with this guy above a liquor store, he would give me cheap red wine to stick through the wires on the face where the tooth had been kicked out, and I would suck on this cheap red wine. I was so tired. I was so broken. I was so out of it that I would just sit at this table and drink this cheap wine. That's all I did. I don't know, maybe it was after about a week, I'm not sure, 5 days, he said, "You gotta leave, you're depressing me." I was like, oh man. I had nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. I had to go back. They caught these guys. They had a case. I had a detective. I had to go back to this surgeon so he could take the wires off my face. At 3 months of sobriety, my first 3 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't talk. I had learned to listen. It was awesome. But I didn't realize that the day he asked me to leave was going to be my day to come to you. It was my lowest point because nobody wanted me. Nobody wanted me. And I called my mom, and she said, "Sharon, I can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army." Kick in the gut. Mom always sent something. Always sent something. And there was a phone number there, and it was that girl, Chris. I don't realize, the girl with the big book that we all cheered out of the bar, that the guy was dating her, and I called her. And she said to me, "I can't help you, but Suzanne can," and I called a stranger. I don't call a stranger, but that day I did. I just kept picking up the next breadcrumb that led me to an Echo Park meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where the Pacific Group used to meet on Wednesday night, and that was the beginning of a brand new life. I had no idea. It was a moment of grace. It was like the window opened up and God pulled me through my hair and the window shut down, and there I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like fly fishing. Sonia was talking about fly fishing, you know. I don't know about you, but I've watched it, you know, just board in a hotel or something and get on the fly fishing channel, and it's just like, oh my God, how long are they going to look at their lures, you know? And my feathers are bigger than your feathers, and then they don't say anything. They just look at each other, you know? And they're all standing out there far apart from each other. And so I got bored and I went around. I came again, and then there was some excitement on the channel. It was like, there was a deer. Oh, how exciting. And then they went back to their little fly fishing thing, you know, whipping it out, pulling it back, whatever. It was just, and I went around again, and then, oh my God, somebody caught one. And they kind of all, with their little baskets and their little outfits on, and they kind of all came together to see what happened. It was very interesting. And then this, it's like that was kind of what happened. God kind of fly fished me in. I got in a basket, and they released me into this other pool of life I had no idea was there. So that's kind of what I think about fly fishing. It's kind of interesting, but it takes a long time. So I came to AA with this woman. She sent over two beautiful babies. I said, no, I'm not getting in the car. That's what my head said. They put me in the car. It's a Volkswagen. I can't get out. I end up at a church. I thought, oh, God, been here, done that. Me and God had a big fight in the Catholic Church. I've been to the Holy Rollers. They wanted a commitment. People wanted forever. And I said, I do a day at a time. Wherever I went with any of that, day at a time. I was with the Krishnas one day. I had a great time. But they wanted me to do all this stuff. And I was like, no, you guys were just fun, you know? But I was seeking. I was always seeking, and I'm in this church, and I think, okay, but like the fly fishing, he hooked me that night, because I just thought I was in a church with the preacher up there at this podium. I didn't know I was at Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said he always waited for the spaceship to land and say, "You can come home now, Bill." I lifted my chin off my chest and looked at all the spaceship people, and I went, spaceship people? It was perfect for me. And I think I was hooked by that. It got my attention, it got to my heart. As silly as it sounds, it woke me up. It gave me some hope. And I think that we each have something in us for somebody else to hear. We each have that hook in us to get one person. You may never know who it is. But if you leave, you might take that hook with you. I think we've been saved to save another. And a girl I sponsor, she's 33 years sober now, absolutely. And she was walking for the fifth time out of AA, I'm leaving forever, and she heard a guy say to another guy, she said, I can't tell you who he was because I only knew people by their shoes. And she said, he said to don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. And it pierced her. And she came back in and sat down after five tries. Now she has 33 years. She heard it. That hook was there for her at the perfect time. We don't know. We're creating ripples every single day of our life. What kind of, am I making a storm or am I creating a ripple that's going to comfort somebody and wrap them in sobriety and give them a chance and have the amends come and have the healing and the redemption and the joy and living your dream? The miracle of sobriety, it's a miracle. Everybody has a sobriety date. Everybody, every alcoholic. Some are in the rooms and some are on their gravestone. We are the lucky ones. We are the lucky ones. And I started my, I started with you. I had no idea. People were kind to me. I don't remember what they said. I heard a lot of the great speakers. All of them. I heard all of them. But I remember the kindnesses of people that looked at me and said, you know, you're going to make it. You know, just keep coming. You're going to make it. It's going to be okay. A lady named Pat Hodges, who married a guy named Clint. Maybe you guys know him up here. His picture's out there for Harlan liked Clint a lot. And Pat was taking me home one more time, and she was a CIA agent, so she scared me. I was always on time when she picked me up. And we're going coffee shop again. And I just thought, I realized I had no control over the right side of my face for a long time. I had no feeling because it was pretty severed. But the coffee, I was trying to fit in. They're eating, talking. So I'm drinking my coffee, and I guess it had been rolling out the side of my face, and I didn't even know it. And then I saw the puddle on the table, and Pat's talking to somebody over there and saw me, and her eyes got big, and I thought, oh, God, here we go. Somebody else take this pig home. I'm sick of taking her back and forth. Somebody else has to take. I'm sick of it. Look at her. Look at what she's done. But instead, she took a napkin, put it in the corner of my face, and put it on the puddle on the table. Went back to her conversation. But before she started her conversation, she gave me a wink. I remember that wink. It was so encouraging. It was so full of love. That's the way I've started to feel things again, tiny little ways. That lady, Pat, she was funny. I had my first commitment. It was one big sink. We had coffee cups and ashtrays, you know, those metal things. We had real coffee cups, so they gave me washing because I couldn't talk. I couldn't do anything, you know, so they, you'll be the washer. That's your commitment. So they put me in front of this sink, and I'm starting to wash the cups, and then they come and they bring, you know, they tap the cigarette butts out of the ashtray and they throw it in with the coffee cups. It's like, there's ashes and cups, and I didn't know what to do. I kind of like stood there, and then Pat walked behind me, and she got in my ear and went, wash. CIA says wash. Okay, I'll wash. So I washed. A man named Hank Johnson, we were up here together, too. I think it was up in Vancouver, close by. I loved him. He was so nice to me. When I got my first car, they made me get insurance so they could be safe from people like me. And so he was an insurance guy, and he came to my little $24 a week room. I was waiting tables. They wouldn't let me bartend. They took the things off the mouth. I had to go become self-supporting, work graveyard shifts, all kinds of crazy things, wear orange all the time, and those white shoes. And I got a little $24 a week room. I got Mr. Coffee, and somebody left a teddy bear and my own telephone. And when the telephone rang, it was an obscene phone call. I thought, oh, AA is going to be fun, you know? And so Hank came all the way to my little hovel in Inglewood to sell me my insurance. I had no table. He wrote on his knees the policy. I signed it. I gave him my first payment full of dollar bills and waitress tips. And he shook my hand and said, welcome to being a citizen. Those kind of kindnesses made the difference for me. I went by that little hovel. It's now a storage unit. That's how small it was. But it was my start here. It was honest. I was making honest money, going to AA with my commitments. Now I'm driving my car. Chuck Nesbitt was a great guy. He was a great guy in our group. He saw me writing down, like, you know, how many rides I got from that person, how many cigarettes people gave me, how many, you know, we were all smoking back then. Said his wife had given me clothes out of her trunk one night, and I didn't realize because he looked at my list. He said, Sharon, put that away. One day you're going to have 20 bucks. You can put it in that newcomer's purse when she goes to the bathroom. One day you're going to have a car. You're going to be able to give rides to people. This is like before I got my car. This is when I was keeping track, as I'm going to pay you back before I leave, because I always leave. I always leave. And he said, and you're going to have, you know, some clothes and cleaner bags and in your trunk. You're going to take that newcomer out who's starting a new job, and you're going to be able to give her some clothes. How does he know about the cleaner bags? It was his wife that did that for me, because I had to go back to court with all of this stuff going on. I had no clothes to wear. And she had given me a couple of dresses to wear. And he said, Sharon, the way we want to be paid back is pass it on. Put that list away. And he gave me a big chunk of some just promise. He gave me promise with that. I am so grateful that people took the time to kind of watch out for me, even though I wasn't a lot of fun to be around. I was kind of a mope. People talk. I'm so grateful I'm in a group where people saw me get sober and they still tease me about it. I'm really, really grateful. There's a picture when the doctor took the wires off the face. He said, do you want a picture? I mean, I was like, I want to. And he took a picture. There's nobody home yet. There's nobody home. I'm 3 months sober and there's no light. And that's what you got, and that's what you said. She's going to be okay. He's going to be all right. Just keep coming. And I got a sponsor louder than my head, and it started. I've had three sponsors. Janet for 5 years, Jenny for 5 years, and Clancy for the last 32. And when I asked Clancy to sponsor me, my life was falling apart at 10 years of sobriety. And he said, we'll try. We've been trying for 32 years. It's working out. But Janet walked me through my first amends with my family. Yeah, I wouldn't do that four-step. I was so panicked. I couldn't remember. I would have these panic attacks trying to remember where I was. And I'm waiting tables, and it's night and day, and I don't know, and I have a bad attitude, and you don't want to make any money. And the Queen Al-Anon, they brought Sally Carpenter over, and she did this one night. So what's that? She said, I want you to go to work tonight and do this. I said, well... She said, what's going on? They had Culver City Clubhouse had called my sponsor, and they had gotten to the Al-Anon because I had a bad attitude at Hobo Joe's. And people would say, let's go sit in that girl's section. She's trying. And they would ask me how I was, and I would sit down and tell them my sad story, sorry story. And I didn't make any money. You know, I mean, the AA people would leave me some money, but people would, strangers would say, how are you? Well, you know, my life is not doing really well right now. I was a bartender in New Orleans, and I really need to finish college, and I can't paint anymore. And, yeah, can we have some eggs, please? You know, it was just, so Sally said, did this. She said, try it tonight. So I went to my graveyard shift. At halfway through my shift, my tips were just doubled. And I learned a valuable lesson. They don't care. They just want hot eggs, you know? And the people I work with, I mean, I can't tell them, oh, stop it. Be nice, you know? Or, God, you shared already. Let this guy talk, you know? Can't do all that. I just got to do my job, go and call you on the phone. You know what he did? You know, thank God I have a door. I can close my door. I think of back in the days when they had one meeting a week. They had to find God. They had to see each other. They had to go to each other's house. They had to have dinner. They had to talk to each other. Oh, we can go anywhere. You can drop in anywhere and find Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh my goodness, we are the lucky ones with this brand new life. And all we have to do is, like the prospector, we get to mine it for the rest of our lives when we find this mother lode, this spiritual awakening, and give every piece away. And once you've had an awakening, it's the only way you can live. It's the only way that I can live, or I go into a depression, which Bill calls spiritual dissatisfaction. You're not depressed. You're spiritually dissatisfied. Get going. Okay. Then I have to go back into the steps. I have to go back into my work and my meditations and things that I try to do in the morning to set my day. Because I'm sorry, I like the covers. I just like the covers. And, every Monday, I take my blood pressure now, whatever. But, every Monday, I'm usually 111, 119. Every Monday morning, I'm 135. It's like Monday, and I just got to get over it. It's so annoying. I've done that since I was six. I would get dressed, go back to bed. My mother would say, "The school bus is across the river. I see it coming." And I would run down. I was already dressed, back in bed. She would hand me a piece of wheat toast with raspberry jam with seeds in it. Well, I like that. I still like it. And I would run out the door with my toast and kind of start my day. And that's the way, that's the way I lived my life, was just on the run. And that's the way a whole, I am not 100% well, believe me. I have a lot. God is not done with me, that's for sure. I just went through 5 months of fear and money and performance and not being enough and knowing they're going to find out, because I got thrown into a situation at my job and it took almost every piece of my life out of me. And I stood back at the end of the year and I went, "What have you done? You were so afraid of losing your house. It's God's house. It's God's job. It's God's money." And I let fear creep in. And I made my meetings, no matter what, I made my meetings, but my contact, my daily contact, working with my girls, all of what I do, the extra stuff got put on hold. And I just sat at that desk, and I would have died at that desk at midnight if I hadn't had this. I can't stand this. I need God, AA, family, work. And I had to put it all, I've never had that happen before in all of my 42 years. Another big lesson I learned. So that's how my blood pressure got high, but it's back down. I'm good. Because screw them, I'm going to do my best, and whatever happens, happens. And maybe God wants me to be a writer anyway, because I want to write. I love writing. He's not thrown my butt off of the cliff if I'm here in the middle of you being sober, and I don't believe I'll ever miss a meal. I don't believe that, because you come to my house, I'll feed you. So my life changed. My family and I, my dad walked me down the aisle. We had an amazing, I married an AA guy, and my dad looked at me in the eye, and we had a picture of me, dad and me, eye to eye. That marriage was to produce a child, and I went back to the Catholic Church because I sponsored this nun. And so my dad got to come, and mom for the christening of baby Wesley. I got to name him after my grandfather. And then it kind of went bad. And in the meantime, this lady named Ginny became my sponsor, and Ginny had me call my dad up and ask him if I could pay him back the money I owed him. How do you know about the money? We didn't talk about that, man. So I called my dad, and my dad had been to the Pacific Group, stood up and said, "I'm Frank Meyer here from Mount Vernon, Iowa, and I'm here to marry my daughter off. I'm here to walk her down the aisle," or whatever he said. And everybody, instead of saying, "Oh, sit down, you're not an alcoholic," they said, "Hi, Frank, welcome. My dad thought you were great, and he got a lot of literature, and he's a reader, and he read. And he ran a calculator tape because he has a business. And he had a dossier on me about that thick," my brother told me. So he went through it and he did a calculator tape and put it on page 79 or wherever it is, "Most Alcoholics Owe Money," and told my mother, "If I stay sober and get to this part of the book and I call home asking for an amount, it's right here circled in red in this calculator tape." He did. My mother told me that after. Thank goodness it was after. But when I called him, he gave me a toller. I went, oh, my God, it's too high. And I called Jenny. She laughed. And this is the kind of love and sponsorship and what I want for the people I work with and people that want for me and people I love. I want them to have as much as is available to brighten up the sunlight of the Spirit so the world can see it. They don't have to know. We're just examples out there. But so that you can pass it on to another. People want to be with people that have the sunlight of the Spirit in their soul. You can be the coffee maker. You can be the GSR. You can be, you know, the washer. You can be whatever. You can be the sponsor. Whatever it is, giving back makes it all happen for me. And Jack said it. He said, you know, you got to give it back to learn more. You got to give it back to understand it more. And I started sponsoring early, but Jenny had me call my dad back in 2 days and ask him if he'd accept my terms. She said to me, because she wanted more for me, she said, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? She didn't say, are you willing to have forgiveness? Are you willing to have a clean slate? She said, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? Well, an odd question from a sponsor. Always have to say yes, because you're curious. And she said, I want you to send a note with that check and don't be late. Bill and Bob are watching. And I tell him about your life. And I complained a little bit, but she said, I don't care, do it. So she would check on me, did the note, my dad got it for almost 5 years. So right in all that time that I was married and having a baby and sending him the checks and the notes and, you know, I would go home and things would be a little better. We'd stop for a root beer. We'd sit under a table by the root beer stand and have our root beer and talk, and things got better incrementally. And at Christmas, he called me the day after. He said, Merry Christmas. Almost 5 years of that check going in the note, not being late, everything like my sponsor said, because Bill and Bob are watching. She said, you know, just do that. And so I really heard her. I've had sponsors louder than my head that want more for me than I want for myself. Be willing to grow through this with your dad. Okay, do this. Merry Christmas, Sharon. I don't want your money anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes. Yeah. So we went to a brand new relationship. He got killed in 99 on his land in an odd accident, and I got off the plane. AA was already in my mother's kitchen. Thank you. That's what we do for each other. And I had to play my dad an accordion number. And he's got a Czechoslovakian accordion. It's all buttons. I know the Italian with piano and the keys and all that. So it was like, oh, my God, I've got this accordion. I want to play Amazing Grace for my dad at his wake. And it was raining. And they say, when a good man dies, it rains. And it's going to rain tomorrow, Harlan. It's going to rain tomorrow, Harlan. And it was raining like crazy. And I practiced this all day in a closet with a girl I sponsor whose eyes haven't stopped spinning yet, I don't think. But my sponsor now was Clancy, because Ginny got off the plane with 21 days from Paris, France, because she'd been smoking pot instead of 21 years. And I was afraid, and I ended up at Clancy's door, and my husband was having an affair with a newcomer. It was a crazy year. I was 10 years sober. That lady, Pat, the CIA agent, looked at me one day at a Saturday night meeting and said, look at Sharon, she's got 10 years to want what she's got. Oh, my God. She said to the newcomer, who went, no. I had my hair spiked Madonna white. I wore T-shirts, ripped jeans, and I would sit in the front row and think, I'm in pain. Go ahead, you know. I had given up being a victim, but now I was back in it and letting you all suffer. Like, oh, my God, look at her. Do you want what she's got? No. It was a rough time. So anyway, I played this number for my dad, but it was only after I called Clancy, because he was out of the country, and now I hadn't talked to him, and my father was killed, and I'm at his wake, and I can't play this accordion number, and nobody knows who I am, and it's raining, and it's now about me. And I'm in the rectory calling my sponsor, and I'm sobbing. And he says, oh, Sharon, I heard what happened. I'm so sorry. And the accordion, I got to play in the Amazing Grace. It's like, you know, your sponsor, you got to really think quick, you know. Are they at a jumping off somewhere? Or they break their toe, you know. So he was like, got it all going. And he said, Sharon, you're going to do a great job. A great job. Play that number for your father. play that number with his accordion for your father, but do me a favor, look around that church. There won't be a dry eye, but there will be about two or three people really sobbing. Look at those people for me, because those are the musicians. Took me right out of myself. I just thought, what? Of course it went well. I've got to hurry up here. I have an amazing child, raised in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor said, you bite your tongue and you don't talk about that girl that he married and had a baby with and then moved on. But she told me she saw me do it, walk through it with dignity and grace because my sponsor demanded I do it. I didn't realize she was going to get my example. I would get on my knees and not wish her drunk, but I would wish her dead. I was so hurt because I marry for life too. My son is great. He's Casey. I married the man of my dreams, Casey. A lot of you knew him. He was up here. And I laid with him. Geez, it'll be 7 years this June as he took his last breath. And he went through me. He left me a lot of love. A lot of love. And the love story continues because I'm taking his ashes all around the world, wherever we've been, wherever he wanted to go. Bungee jump, parachuted, gone, you know, places he's golfed. He's been around the world. He's been to Australia under a beautiful koala in one of the forests. And I'm going to take him out a little bit to the beach and have a moment with Harlan, because Casey and Harlan laughed together, threw their heads back and laughed. So I'm going to take him a little bit here, because we had a moment here with you. And I don't forget those moments. Maybe I forget the people, or, I mean, Steve forgot me, but that's all right. I wasn't going to go back and tell my sponsor anything about the tie. I was going to say, you know, I was with this guy, and I got in the car with him, and I said, I remember, and he said, I don't know you. And I was like, okay, but I triggered your memory with a lot of fun stuff, so... Anyway, my son is, Casey helped him with his passion, and he's not an alcoholic, and he's working for, you know, what he wants to do in life, and the beautiful part of it is that I didn't push them together, and I bit my tongue when Jill and Al were together, and all of that, and my son would tell me how wonderful Jill was to him, and my son was working in Paris, and he met his fiance, and they're getting married in France this summer. It's so exciting. I have to go. And afterwards, I'm traveling with some of my friends afterwards. We're going to some places, but I'm tying it in because Jill had told me she knew she could do it when he had left her because she had watched me. She got my example. Clancy had said, you bite your tongue. You don't say anything about that about her to your child. You let him think she's a wonderful person. Because he would go there every other weekend, or go to Disneyland, or Jill did this, or Jill did that. So my son wanted his fiance to hear my talk. Now, he hasn't cared about AA for years, years. So I had one of my girls listen. I said, send him a good one. I don't know. So she sent him a talk over the link, and so they listened to it coming back when they were moving back from Paris. And do you know what he said to me? Went and had coffee. And I guess I had talked about Jill in that talk. He said to me, you know, he's 32, and he said, Mother, I didn't know you went through all of that with Jill. Isn't that beautiful? My sponsor had me bite my tongue so my son could have his own childhood and relationship and everything that went on. I remember when we were in the car going to the Catholic school because he got kicked out of the Lutherans. So I sent him to that nun I sponsor, and he would sing Keep Coming Back at the end of Happy Birthday, and they read A.A. Milne, so he'd go, I know about A.A., my mommy's in A.A. He always outed me all the time, and, it's just been amazing that you've taught me so much. But he looked over at me. That's right, I was driving to school, and he just looked over at me when his dad married the third one. He said, you know what, my dad's a marrying fool. I never said it, you know, I didn't say it. So Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a brand new life. I'm growing, I'm changing, I'm seeking, I'm sharing, I'm loving. It's all about the love. And by seconds and inches, we could not be sitting in this room tonight. Norm used to talk about seconds and inches, and that's the truth. We are the lucky ones. And Blake, William Blake, when they throw me on the pyre of life, he saw them going up and down the Ganges and all these fires. He didn't know what they were. They were boats on fire with their loved ones that they put everything they loved in the boat, and then they lit them on fire and put them down the Ganges as these celebrations would go every so often for their dead ones. And Blake was looking at that, and he looked, he couldn't believe it when the guy told him it's lives. They're all lives going down there. They're, you know, people are gone. And he just had this beautiful moment, and I thought, that's it. Because it says on page 77, our purpose, our real purpose is to fit ourselves. A lot of work to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And Blake saw all of those pyres of life burning, going down, all these lives that had been over. And he said, man, when they throw me on the pyre of life, may I be all used up. Thanks for having me. I hope I didn't go too much. You're fine.
Keep it going.